I always love when I have former teammates on, especially one as cool as this guy. It was a little awkward though when I met him. He said, "Hi, my name is Brian Berard, but you can call me the Rocket from Wound Socket." Let's in big in Brian Berard right now. B, thanks for joining us. And why do you give yourself nicknames?
Thanks for having me, Night Train. If you want to go there, I think you self-named yourself that as well, didn't you?
I was trying to copy you. Now, B, you know, you had a long NHL career and a lot of bumps and bruises along the way. And you recently came out with a book, Relentless, and talking about my life in hockey and the power of perseverance. Why did you initially decide to pen this book along with the help of a good friend?
To be honest, Fred, I just want to get my story out there, and it's really not just a hockey book as well. Obviously, if you read the book or reading the book, Some things happened to me off the ice with a financial, a financial advisor, some fraud, some insurance fraud as well. So I just really wanted to get my story out there instead of kind of being embarrassed about it and really hide from it. I wanted to try to, I guess, kind of, get my story out there to help some other people that maybe I can prevent that from happening to them.
Now, when you did, and the book is amazing. I've read it and I absolutely loved it. And, when you started out, playing up, growing up in Rhode Island, you and Brian Boucher also went to the NHL. He was a very good player, but you guys had a lot of success. And then you get drafted. And, you know, when you get that drafted, what are your initial thoughts when you are that top pick? Is it like, I'm going to be set now for a number of years playing in the NHL?
I think so. I mean, it's always a dream come true. And obviously being an American player going first overall too, I think I was the third player to do that. So that was an exciting day. And to share it with my good friend Boosh, who we grew up together basically from first grade on, right up through junior high school when we both took off. I went to the OHL and he played in the dub. But it was just a special day from, obviously for me and my parents. And then for me, getting drafted by Ottawa, and I think I got a little bit of a bad rap and I explained in the book, but, I was ready to play. I was happy getting drafted by Ottawa. It was more of an ego thing. I was ready to play at 18, I thought, and I wanted to go into camp and make that team and play in the NHL as an 18-year-old. I don't think there's a lot of players that have done that. Things obviously didn't work out in Ottawa and then got traded to the Islanders, but, then kind of started my career as a 19-year-old. And then you were there with me with the Islanders. We had a great group of young players, myself, Bertuzzi, Brian McCabe, Fichaud and stuff like that. So it was a good team to kind of break into the league and kind of take the pressure off myself as coming as a first round pick.
Yeah. And in your time with the Islanders, I mean, did you feel that, you had all the support you needed, like as far as the coaching and stuff to keep working on your game? Because if those aren't familiar with Brian, he was an extremely good skater, extremely offensive player. And I was always very jealous of that. Did you feel like you're getting the coaching you needed to make kind of keep rounding out your game to become that defense that, ultimately wanted like at both ends of the rink that you wanted to be?
That's a great question, Fred, because, now I'm back home in Rhode Island and working with the Mount St. Charles Academy team and working with, 14, 18-year-olds, and I kind of keep an eye on a defenseman. And, I think I got away with a lot of things earlier in my career, not just in the NHL. I'm talking about junior with, my skating was probably my biggest asset. And it made up for a lot of things, I kind of get caught up and I could kind of, chase the guys and get back on defense. But, there's a lot of other things that when I look back in my NHL career, I wish I learned, before I became a pro. Especially in the defensive zone, one-on-ones and things like that. So I think growing up, obviously, I did have good coaches, and it's not them. But I wish I could have, maybe had some time with some ex-players or ex-NHL guys to kind of show me just little things. Because it took me a few years in the NHL and with some help like Bill Stewart and some guys that, kind of had a defensive zone-minded. Because, again, coming in as an offensive defenseman, you kind of get a bad rap right away. And I did take chances. If we were down 4-1 or 5-2, I'd rather try to take a chance and try to get us back in the game. And what's the difference if you lose 5-2 or 6-2? And I think a lot of coaches, didn't like that. So early on, I had a little bit of a tough time kind of adapting, to some of the coaches. And obviously, Milbury there, fired a couple of them and said, please don't be a coach killer, which wasn't a great thing. But, then I learned. And then as my, my experience came on, I learned to play on my own end.
Brian Berard joins us. His book is Relentless, My Life in Hockey and the Power of Perseverance. It's a great read. I'd really recommend it to anyone. Brian, or B, when you then were traded to the Maple Leafs, did you understand what it's like to play hockey as a Maple Leaf in Toronto?
I did not. And I thank Milbury myself and Mike Milbury had a love-hate relationship, and obviously traded for me and then traded me to Toronto, which was kind of almost like winning the Powerball. Going to a place in Toronto, you know, as a young, you know, I was 21, 22 years old, a single guy living in Toronto, and it was a good team. I walked into that locker room with guys like Matt Sundin, Steve Thomas, Ty Domi, you know, with the Russian Mafia. We have about 7-8 great Russian players. It was a lot of fun, and I love Toronto. It was a great place. But to walk into that and then, you know, going from the Islanders and then coming into a, you know, you get off the ice for a practice and you got about, you know, 40 to 50 media guys waiting for interviews just after a practice was definitely an eye-opener. You know, and some help with some, again, like Matt's just kind of said, you know, don't read the newspapers and kind of, you know, just keep plugging away. And you know, that was a fun time for me. We had a really good team. Unfortunately, obviously that's where the eye accident, happened, and it was a freak accident, but you know, Toronto was some great memories. That organization was nothing but, you know, special to me. They took good care of me, obviously with the support, after the injury as well. So it's definitely some good memories.
Well, and that's a big part of your career is the injury where Marian Hossa caught you with his stick in the eye. And maybe take us from the moment that happens, what the next little while was for you as you kind of reacted and felt all those things of the injury that was an eye with Hossa.
Yeah, it's you know, a lot of people came up to me after I wrote the book and says, was it tough, you know, to kind of relive that? And it wasn't. Again, it happened. There's nothing I can do about it. But that night in Ottawa, it was tough. I mean, right away, I knew I was in trouble. You know, my first thought was, please don't lose my eye. My second thought was, I think my NHL career is over. So that was the tough thing to, obviously it's, you know, a young, 23 years old. So I thought my NHL career was pretty, you know, at that time, I thought my career was done. So it was tough. I mean, I went through 6 or 7 surgeries, you know, battled back. I went back home with my parents. The surgeries were all out in New York. It was definitely dark. I mean, it was just, but you know, like we talk in the book, I just kept plugging away in a day at a time. And then as soon as the surgeries were done, my body started to adapt a little bit, to the one eye and really kind of, you know, definitely lost my depth perception. But as I started doing, you know, I think being a pretty good athlete growing up too helped me. So I started throwing the football around, throwing the baseball around and really getting back in the gym. And then, you know, I thought there was going to be a chance that I could actually play, at least get back on the ice. And then I thought there's, you know, I kind of pushed myself to kind of prove myself wrong and prove everybody else wrong that I could play in the NHL with one eye.
Brian Brower joins us. His book is Relentless, My Life in Hockey and the Power of Perseverance, a fantastic book. He's a veteran of over 600 NHL games. You know, you had the eye injury, then it takes a little bit of time, but then the Rangers bring you in, and you go into a dressing room with guys like Lindros, Fleury, Brian Leetch, and Mark Messier, all these great, great players. What were your feelings then? Because you probably thought, you know, 2 years ago I was going to play with these guys, no problem, but now can I still do this?
And I think that's, I mean, I get to practice with those guys every day. And I think that helped me kind of, I guess, get back to, you know, I never came back at 100%. I probably was 80% the player, obviously with the one eye, but to practice with those guys every day. And you know, that year I played and the Rangers were great. I mean, they stuck with me all year. I was, you know, probably a 6 or 7 defenseman, but kept me in the lineup. I played all 82 games. But it was frustrating. For one, I didn't like the visor, which was kind of crazy, but to get used to the visor, to get used to the one eye, I used to go back to the bench and complain all the time. And Leetchie finally kind of looked over, Brian Leetchie kind of looked over at me and said, stop it. I mean, you're back, you're playing in the NHL with one eye. He's like, think of the positive and just, you know, you're playing pretty well. Just keep going out there and plugging away. And again, it took me probably, and then the next year, you know, I signed in Boston. And I had a pretty good, you know, pretty good season, but I still wasn't myself. So that was kind of a little frustrating, but I felt as the more I played, I felt that, especially offensively, you know, the eye didn't really affect me offensively. It definitely did in the defensive zone, kind of turning my head and looking around, covering guys in front of the net and kind of, you know, guys dumping pucks in on you was a little difficult. And that really was, things that I had to kind of adjust and adapt to, coming back after the injury.
Well, I remember when you were playing Chicago one time, I think it was a 3-on-2. And, you know, there was kind of two guys on your side and I thought everything was looking good. And then all of a sudden there's a pass right to a guy that, you know, just, I was like, oh my goodness, you didn't see him, and just a tap in. And we came to the bench. He just looked at me like, sorry, I didn't see him. I'm like, okay, what am I supposed to say? Like, you literally didn't see him. So, you know, what was the reaction from your teammates first off when you first came back, but then over the course of your career? Because there were a few, like, you know, quote unquote blind spots where you couldn't see what maybe guys you were defending.
Absolutely. I mean, with you, I could, you know, I'm comfortable enough. We played a lot together, and so I kind of probably was like, damn, that was my fault. I didn't see him, and we probably got a chuckle out of it. But,
yeah.
You know, nobody really, really said much to me. I think they kind of knew, and I was never to, I guess, run or hide from my own mistakes. I kind of lived up to them and hopefully get it back to the team. But, you know, there's definitely that's part of the game that was difficult. And I think some of the coach, you know, again, being a player I once was before coming back, and I think – a lot of players, some of the older players definitely had some respect, so especially, you know, in the corners chasing me down. If one guy was chasing me, he might give me a little heads up that he's on my right side. And, I mean, he still finished his check and hit me pretty good. But, you know, that's what's great about hockey players. It's a lot of respect, and that's why it's such a great sport.
Then, you know, there comes a point where everyone has to move on from the NHL, and you go to Russia. Maybe talk a little bit about your experience in Chekhov Vityaz.
It was actually the Wild Wild West, but I actually enjoyed it. Again, I was a single guy over in Russia. Our team was, you know, we're about 60 kilometers south of Moscow. Our team was owned by a Russian mob boss at the time, a southern mob boss. So he treated us really well. The travel is tough, though. I probably should have stayed over there financially and kept playing a little bit. But unfortunately, the year after I didn't go back, that's when the tragedy with the plane going down. But that's the biggest thing over there. I was never scared to fly here, and I'm not scared today in North America. But over in Russia with all the old planes and traveling, you know, not like a 6 to 9 hour flight would be on the regular plane over there. That was the difficult. But the hockey was good. I mean, top two lines. Pretty much everybody can play in the NHL. It was on the big ice, so it was kind of like an old man's game. It wasn't very physical. I had a really good time over there. I mean, I got to travel and see some great cities like Riga, Latvia, you know, Kiev, Ukraine. Kazakhstan was an eye-opener. So it was definitely a great experience.
Got Brian Berard in line, a longtime NHLer and author of a book, Relentless, My Life in Hockey and the Power of Perseverance. You know, while you're playing or when anyone's playing there, they were investing their money and trying to, you know, put it somewhere where it's going to be someone and we're done. And you kind of got connected with a guy who seemed like everything was on the up and up, but then it goes sideways and not till kind of the end of your career found that out. Share that, how that came up out and how kind of unfolded for you and for others in a similar situation.
Yeah, that's the most difficult thing. Obviously, you know, we play hockey and we try to build ourselves a little nest egg. And when my career was kind of winding down and basically getting on a plane to head to Russia for a year and you know, ready to kind of enjoy retirement, I kind of get a call from the feds and that my financial advisor was under investigation. And at first, I didn't believe it. Phil Kenner was a friend of mine, you know, spent a couple of nights at my house at Christmas. I've known him since I was about 17 years old. So when I went over to Russia, kind of still questioning it, kind of went through a lot of old emails, and I was living with a player over there in Russia that was a client of his as well. So we really just started doing our homework, and then I kind of reached out. I touched base to an ex-police officer, John Kaiser, out of New York, and who was him and his family were also defrauded from Phil Kenner as well. So, and then we just kind of it was an eye opener. It was kind of like, holy crap, we were taken advantage of and stolen from. And I mean, I grew up as a, you know, my family's blue collar family. My dad was a mechanic. My parents raised six kids. So my dad, you know, we didn't know anything about investing. So I had to trust somebody. And you know, unfortunately, that nest egg was pretty much all gone. So it was an eye opener and basically spent a few years in New York kind of trying to figure that out and then had to come back to Rhode Island and kind of get back to work. And you know, I go to work every day. And I'm actually working in finance now. So I work for a company called Whale Rock Point Partners out of Providence, Rhode Island. You know, I wish I would have met these guys when I was 17, 18. I definitely would still have my nest egg and probably more. And really, I've been doing that and really trying to educate some younger players or really anybody. I mean, look at the Madoff thing. A lot of people have been stolen. A lot of smart people have been stolen from as well. So that's really why I wrote this book, and I want to get that out there. And especially for the younger players in the NHL. I mean, they're so talented now, and the contracts are great. You know, they're huge, and it's great to see those guys, you know, making the money. But I also want them to invest, you know, to educate themselves and invest smartly. You definitely do still have to trust somebody. So I just really want to tell a story to kind of help these guys out.
Yeah, you know, joined by Brian Berard, and I think that, you know, as a player who's been through, I think that a guy like you to sit and talk with you, they've been through so much, you know, on the ice, off the ice, all that stuff. I mean, you must have a really nice, be able to create a nice rapport with these guys you sit down and talk with because of that.
I can. And the biggest, my issue is the biggest thing is I'm petrified of talking in front of big groups. It's like the biggest anxiety. I wish I could speak more, but that definitely if I can grab the kids, you know, in smaller groups and kind of talk to them and just really just to be honest, tell them what happened to me, why it happened to me, And really started, to be honest, we started investing a little bit outside the box and started doing a lot of real estate deals, big real estate deals, and with Lehman Brothers at the time, who obviously is no longer in New York. The company wasn't saved. Obviously, they're doing some wrong things. So we kind of just started doing those big deals, and that's where a lot of the stuff was with Ponzi schemes and really scams. So, you know, I just try to educate those guys. Really, when we played, all we thought about was playing hockey.
Right.
And I wish, the hindsight for me, I wish I would have looked back and maybe took in a couple classes or read, you know, introduced and or asked the right questions, on where to invest. And really, I wish I would have had somebody that maybe, you know, that could have helped me a little bit and steer me in the right directions. But again, most of us hockey players are blue-collar kids, and our parents don't really know much about investing.
Well, one dark time for you I want to get to, and I didn't really want to bring it up, but obviously I have to. Memorial Cup in Kamloops, your team, I think you guys, I don't know if you guys won a contest or something in the OHL to go and to take us on in Kamloops with the Detroit Junior Wings or Junior Whalers.
It was Junior Wings at that time.
Okay, Junior Wings. Like, you had a good season. And then, you know, I don't want to bring it up, but I mean, someone has to bring it up. In the final of the Memorial Cup, I don't know if it was 7-2 or 8-1. It doesn't really matter. It was pretty one-sided. But, you know, I've always wanted to ask you this. The rumor is that you hurt your leg in the semifinal night. That sounds to me a little bit like Michael Johnson when he pulled up lame against Donovan Bailey in that 200-meter race. So is this legit?
No.
You have it in the book, Brian. Is it legit?
That is legit. I heard that it was either you or Jason Holland that paid somebody on Brandon Wheat King to meet me in that semifinals game. It probably might have been Brian McCabe, because I literally had a play on one leg, and that's the only reason why you guys won. I can honestly say that's true, even though your team was absolutely loaded. Well, you should actually name some of the guys on that team. It's ridiculous.
Yeah,
Ginla.
Yeah.
Oh, it was ridiculous.
Yeah, Shane Doan. We had a pretty good group, but it was funny. I remember that game. We were like, oh my God, we got to stop the rocket from Woonsocket. And then he came out and they're like, he's got a bad leg. I'm like, oh, thank God. There was so much pressure on us to win it.
I know. Those guys, the trainers and doctors were sticking needles in my leg trying to drain it. That's how swollen it was. It wasn't fun, that's for sure.
Oh, crazy. Well, B, I really appreciate it, man. It was great great talking to you, and great book, honestly, Relentless, a fantastic book about my life in hockey and the power of perseverance, man. Great stuff.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for plugging the book, and I miss you, buddy.
Yeah, I miss you.
We'll get together soon.
That sounds good. I'll come to you. I'll leave the kids behind.
All right, Strud. Thank you, my man.